Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Dun, 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 dun. Welcome. You guys are listening to the Command Zone podcast. Audio podcast, maybe video podcast.
I missed my cue. How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Oh, yeah. My name is Jimmy Wong. We are your hosts for the Command Zone podcast. We talk about all things Commander and EDH, but you guys probably already knew that.
Well, we want to make sure that they're not confusing this with the sideboard episode, which we just had. You know, so we're back to the Command Zone now.
Yep. You can tell by the normal intro and the fact that we have not mentioned... Well, we're going to talk about Commander today, actually. So we have a really special, exciting episode. I'm really excited. We have a Commander 2015 spoiler.
Spoiler alert!
Air horn alert. Pew, pew, pew. We also have a very fun episode because today we're going to be talking about, first, the Magic Online Legendary Cube.
Legendary.
So they announced this back in August. The Legendary Cube, we'll do a very quick breakdown. It's a new draft format that you can play on Magic Online. If you guys have played like the Legacy Cube on there before or the Holiday Cube, you'll have a good idea of what a cube is. Or if you played the cube in real life, you'll know what it is. It's very special because every creature within it is legendary.
Yeah, it's been specifically designed to play like Commander.
Yep.
Which is super exciting for us. You know, it's really fitting because we just did the sideboard episode, which was about draft, and normally our content is about Commander, and this Legendary Cube is basically like if draft and Commander had a baby.
Yeah. It would be a cool baby.
Yeah.
Coolest baby on the block.
The baby's favorite grandparents would be Prophet of Krufix and Consecrated Sphinx, and Blood Moon at all.
I don't know if Consecrated Sphinx would make a good grandparent. That thing is like a giant Phyrexian bug.
But it draws you a million cards.
Yeah, but it's terrifying.
That's like the grandparent that just gives you the best presents all the time.
Yeah, but every time it gives you the present, you feel and you're like, oh God.
It smells like grandma's.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But the nice thing about the Legendary Cube is it ties right in also to the Commander 2015 Pro League, because this time around you get to win cards from the cube, and outside from the cube there's an independent selection of 149 cards, and you can actually win cards that are inside the cube, and this usually does not happen with cubes. Cubes, you draft and then you give the cards back.
Yeah, usually they're phantom points, or they call them player points
play
now. They're usually like, yeah, you just draft the cube and that's it. You don't get anything except for more phantoms or slash player points now.
It's good because you can't rare draft because you're drafting usually very high power level cards and stuff.
That's true. Also, I mean, did you say this? You were talking so fast. maybe I'm repeating, but the cards you're going to win, some of them are going to be cards from the new Commander 2015 product. And that's the only way that you're actually going to be able to get those cards on Magic Online, because they're not going to sell the Commander pre-con decks online.
Because, well, there's only 55 new cards in the set. Honestly, just buying a full box of the pre-con is not good value. You know, you can get all the cards individually for
cheaper.
They
just haven't historically sold well on MTGO, so this is their way of sort of trying something different, and I think it's smart.
Yeah, I think it's smart, too. And, of course, who doesn't love cracking packs, especially when you can win them playing in a really sweet cube. Who knows? This may be my first steps to making an EDH deck on Magic Online.
Oh, snap!
Get ready for me to really miss a lot of triggers.
I'll
misclick through all of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I'll forget to do stuff in response and be like, oh God, that was your end step. Why is it my turn? Oh no. It's all over.
So to talk about the Legendary Cube on MTGO, we have brought in a very special guest.
Woo-hoo.
We have Adam Prozac. Adam works in Magic R&D, that's research and development, as a game designer. Adam, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, first off, Adam, let's give our viewers a very brief breakdown of who you are.
So I am a developer in Magic R&D. In relation to this, I do a lot of my work on maintaining the other cubes that we have on Magic Online, the Legacy Cube and the Vintage Cube. I've been at Wizards for about 2 years.
Very nice. Do you play Commander yourself?
So I've dabbled in Commander. I'm certainly not the hardcore Commander player that you guys are.
Well, few are, Adam. Few are.
Yeah, I know. We're at that upper echelon at this point.
Do you have a Commander deck?
Not currently.
Oh, who have you? Go ahead.
I've built Commander's decks in the past. In fact, a lot of my Commander's show up in the legendary cube.
Uh-huh. I wonder why that is.
Yeah. I've had a Hannah Ships Navigator deck, Niv-Mizzet deck.
You monster.
Well, I don't kill you instantly with my Niv-Mizzet deck.
Yeah, you just do it instantly.
I never liked the instant win combos.
Yeah.
And I had a Cedrus deck, an Unearthed deck. That was my favorite.
Oh, very nice. That's a mechanic I don't see very often.
Are we correct in assuming that, like, if we ever see those cards come across the Legendary Cube, we should take them because you've supported those cards more than the others?
Not necessarily.
That's a yes. That's a yes, everybody.
I think a lot of my personal favorite cards, it's interesting, and we'll get into this more, but building a cube with such a constraint is so interesting. You know, if all the creatures are legendary, a ton of cards that are just like commander staples, like your Eternal Witnesses.
Right.
Right.
You know, your Prophet of Crew Fixes, your Consecrated States, they're not in here.
Grandma and Grandpa are not in there?
I mean, they should be legendary with how ridiculously powerful they are.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to play them as my commander.
Yeah, I know, right?
Broken.
Yeah, seriously.
Let's talk about, speaking of the constraint, let's talk about where the entire idea for the Legendary Cube came from. Was that something that you came up with? Is it a team? How does it work exactly?
It certainly wasn't my idea, but we in Magic R&D, we have a digital component to it. So people that work exclusively on Magic Online.
Right.
And a lot of what they're trying to do is come up with new, like, cool content for that can only really be done on Magic Online.
Yeah.
Something that Magic Online can offer that other things. Right? Like, that's why we did Vintage Masters.
Right.
Tempest Remastered.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Vintage and the Eternal formats are insanely cheaper to play on Magic Online, and it really is one of the only realistic ways you can play because
they're allowed to actually, quote-unquote, yeah, reprint the reserve list because they're not actually printing them. They're creating them digitally so that you can play with Black Lotus and you can actually open a pack that has Black Lotus.
Magic Online does not have a reserve list, so right, you can do a bunch of cool things like Vintage. And I actually worked on both Vintage Masters and Tempest Remastered.
Very cool. Very nice, yeah.
So where did the idea for the Legendary Cube itself come from?
Right now we support two different cubes. Vintage Cube or the Holiday Cube, and the Legacy Cube. Those are really popular. But those kind of just, like, take a format, Legacy or Vintage, and just kind of take the best cards possible.
Right.
So it's at the absolute top of the power curve. You're just getting the most powerful cards. Well, we thought, like, well, not everybody just wants to play. Not all of these cards are for everybody. And so, like, you know, a lot of people with a lot of different cubes, you know, common and uncommon cubes, tribal cubes, color-only cubes, you know, all sorts of different cubes. It's like, oh, what kind of different cube can we make at Wizards that might serve a different audience? And we're like, oh, wow, one of the underserved audiences on Magic Online is the Commander audience. And that's kind of where it came from. It actually started out as a multicolored cube that was just going to have a lot of the, like, multicolored and legendary.
Right. Well, the original multicolored cards were all legendaries way back in the day when they were fully gold.
Right. And so that's where it came out. That's where it started. And very quickly it turned into, like, hey, what happens if literally every single creature is legendary?
That's awesome.
That is very awesome.
And then it just went from there.
Did you hear that, everybody? It's the Commander community. Like, yeah, they know about us.
we make Commander products for you guys every year.
No, yeah, I know, right? I'm not pretending that you
we're
do.
We're very, right?
It's
and
funny.
Conspiracy. Like,
everyone that I follow from Wizards on Twitter, I usually see are like, hey, it's Commander night, and you just see like 8 decks on the table. You're like, whoa, that must be sweet to have such an immediate play group.
There's a ton of people that play Commander at Wizards. In fact, one of the people on the development team, Robert Schuster.
Oh, yes.
He organizes the command zone.
Arg, the pirate himself.
Yeah, the pirate himself. Yeah, if you guys watch the Community Cup, you will recognize Robert as he was the one that faced off against us in the very first ever Commander section of the Community
Cup. And Jimmy's deck just steamrolled him.
Well, I mean, it slowly steamrolled him. It was a true steamroller. It went very slowly, and you could see it coming from a mile away.
So, Adam, what was your specific role on the Legendary Cube?
So, we had in R&D, most products get two different processes. You had a design process and a development process. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are even more complicated than that, you know, art and story and all that stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But for this product, there's basically a design process and a development process within R&D. And so design kind of creates the vision. That was led by Randy Buehler.
Right.
And he works on...
May have heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may have heard of him. He's a Hall of Famer, does our coverage.
And he works on the other cubes also, right?
Yeah, and he's also he's responsible for the Super Leagues that are on Twitch, which are super fun to watch.
Right. So, yeah, Randy and I do the same thing for our Legacy and Vintage cubes, so it's a natural extension that we would work on this one. This one was different because we actually spent a whole process. We had a team of people working with us. So Randy led the design, and I led the development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then my development team was myself, aforementioned Robert Schuster, and Jackie Lee, who's a former pro player,
mm-hmm.
who now works in R&D. We spent a bunch of time working and getting this right, and everything changes so rapidly when we're building something from scratch. It takes quite a bit of time. So my role was to lead the development. Randy gave me something to work with. He came up with something from nothing,
right?
And then I took that and worked it into what you'll play on Magic Online.
About how long does that process take? So let's say if they said today, you know, you hadn't started on it yet. Okay, we're going to do a legendary cube. How long until it's like you say, okay, it's ready to go?
It was in design and development for about 16 weeks.
Okay.
About 4 months?
4 months, yeah.
Yeah.
You have the coolest job because Jimmy and I have been teaming up with a friend of ours, Craig, and Craig did most of the work, honestly, and we've been making a cube for fun.
Yeah.
This is your job.
Yep. Yeah.
You're a lucky man, Adam.
Yeah. Well, I've built cubes, you know, ever since I've known a cube exists. Like, I've built cubes for over 10 years.
Right.
Yeah, you just, and at first you were doing the same thing, just doing it for fun. But now you actually get paid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now you actually get paid to do it. Do you, like, look up and, like, thank your fairy godmother that, like, I mean, because if you don't, you definitely should. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You don't want that fairy godmother to stop waving the magic wand.
I very much tell people that I have the best job in the world, and it'd be really difficult for me to imagine doing anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely have to have an episode on Cube. It may be a sidebar episode for us because it is a really fascinating format, and you get to play with a power level that I think is very similar and familiar to Commander players because it's up there. And
you can create combos, and you can, it's very, very cool.
Well, the great thing about Cube is that you actually get to pick your power level.
Right.
Yeah. And you get to go into a cool archetype that someone else has designed and sort of given you the support and tools to make. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm really excited, actually, because Commander cards, I think, have a lot of direction built into them, especially the commanders and stuff. Now, how much of those, the product, when you guys only, you didn't include, obviously, every one of the new cards, but a lot of them are going to be in there. How much impact did those cards and their power level have on sort of the other cards in the cube that may or may not affect them?
So, with the cards in Commander products, a lot of them aren't really great at going into a cube, especially for Magic Online, because cube is a one versus one format.
Right. Correct, yeah. Right.
And a lot of the best Commander designs kind of scale or work better when you have a lot of different players. You'll see that, you know, for example, I forget which commander it's in, but like the join forces mechanic.
Right. That has to do with how many other players
choose to do something with you. Yeah.
So if it's just one on one, it's not, there's not a lot of interesting stuff that goes on. But if there's five people now, all of a sudden there's a bunch of negotiation and the power level of your effect can grow or shrink depending.
Right. And don't get me wrong, there are still a ton of, like, Commander has a ton of influence, like Commander products, all of them
together,
has a ton of influence. There's a ton of those cards in here, but, like, typically you only get a few from each Commander set that work really well. Like, a lot of the creatures end up from one of the Commander, because Commander is where you get to have, like, the three and four, you know, two and three color legends.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because they're enemy-themed this year in Commander 2015. And we'll actually be cracking a pack later on in the show, and we'll get to see sort of what colors are going on there. Very exciting, though. I cannot wait to at least test some of these out in a new 1v1 format. Because it's interesting, in the Legacy Cube, Consecrated Sphinx can be a first pick out of a pack.
But it's not amazing.
It's not amazing, but it's still It's really good. Strong. You know? Yeah, it's still super strong, which is great because, you know, it doesn't, just because it's better in multiplayer doesn't mean it's not equally strong and as first pickable in 1v1, which is interesting.
Makes sense. Can you talk to us, Adam, about some of the unique challenges for this cube specifically that maybe wouldn't be there for another cube? I mean, yeah. you talked about the legendary thing and Eternal Witness, but was there anything else?
When it comes to legendary creatures, do a gather search on how many legends there are.
Uh-huh.
And then take all the ones that are, like, really, really specific, and you actually don't have a ton of things to choose from.
Right.
You are restricted to a very small amount of things, and then you do stuff like look at the balance of the cube. Like, for example, one of the first cards we tried out and cut was Empress Galena.
Too good.
You look at that one. That's just like,
it steals a legendary.
Totally ridiculous. Yeah, it just steals all of your opponent's creatures.
Yeah, right. That's insane.
Yeah, that card's totally broken in a cube where everything's legendary.
But makes a lot of sense.
on the flip side, we were able to take a lot of the other cards that are like Legends Matters or work well with Legends and kind of build stuff on that. So
that is exciting. There are a lot of Legends Matters cards, and I don't actually see them too often in EDH, like Arena of the Ancients kind of sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I really like that effect because I think, you know, obviously we're all playing with powerful creatures, and a lot of them are legendaries. Mm-hmm. Another question. Now, they don't have the legendary subtype, but will we be seeing Planeswalkers of any sort in this cube?
So there are a couple planes. I believe there are two, and they both support one of the big like sub-themes. And the thing that they support the artifacts theme. So there's Tezzeret the Seeker and Dreddy Scraps of them.
Yes, very nice.
We did build in some themes where we could. Like,
so there are some archetypes.
There absolutely is archetypes. It's a lot of times it's tough to get them with only legendary creatures because there aren't a ton of legends.
Right. That makes
that
a lot of sense.
Fit into the same theme.
Right. And then without non-legends, it's hard to make certain themes work. Like, I'm going to guess that a flicker mechanic would be tough because most of the things you want to flicker are not legendary.
Right. Exactly. Flicker just, like, doesn't have, like, you don't have your Mole Drifters or your, you know.
Yeah, your Cloud Goat
Mana
Rangers.
Wars or, or anything like that. And a lot of times when we're making normal sets, we'll build a theme, like, say, Landfall in Battle for Zendikar.
Mm-hmm.
We'll build a landfall theme into the set. And then we'll top it off with, like, one legend.
Right.
Right.
Well, one legend does not a theme make.
It's like there's Tassigur, but there's not, like, a whole bunch of Delve legends.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's a Delve legend. So a lot of the legends come at you from, like, different angles and different things. So a lot of the synergies and archetypes are built into the non-creatures.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm guessing the artifacts, enchantments, instants, and sorceries are going to be make a big difference sort of in the cube because that's where you can really get creative in molding what happens with the cards.
So we looked at enchantments, but again, a lot of the payoff cards are creatures and non-legendary creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So we really didn't have access to like an Argorthian Enchantress,
right,
for example, or like Core Spirit Dancer.
Right, any of the stuff that really pays you for having a bunch of enchantments. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, so there is in Instants and Sorceries deck. They're a lot of fun to draft. I'm definitely an Izzet guy myself.
Oh, very nice.
Is Melek in the cube?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Paragon.
When possible, a lot of them are mostly supported in the non-creatures, but maybe have like 2 to 5, you know, somewhere, some low amount, like Talrand is in the cube.
Right.
Yep.
So there's some stuff.
This is so exciting. These are all cards that I know. Sometimes you'll mention like a legacy card. I'm like, I don't really know what it is. But every single one of these legendary creatures, I'm like, oh, yes, I know them very well.
I know that whole deck.
Yeah.
So you probably know more about these cards than I do, because when I was building this, I had to look up so many cards. I became 300 times more familiar with every single legendary creature in Magic.
I bet.
Building this, I would just constantly just have Gather opened, just type in legend and just
see what comes.
Stare at my screen for a while. You know.
Well, I'm chomping at the bit here. Why don't we just get to the getting?
Yeah,
what do you think?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we are going to crack a pack of the legendary cube. It's a digital pack.
Hold on, I'll do some real life sound effects.
Oh, we got a Foley stage here.
Yeah. This is actually
a granola bar.
A granola bar. I'm
We didn't even have to say the granola bar part. They don't know.
They don't know, right?
That one's actually a pack.
That's a pack.
So
that was still a granola bar.
We're gonna read off the cards that are in the pack and what they do. If you're in your car or you're listening to it, it might be a little tough to follow. Yep. If you can, I would suggest that you go to YouTube and you check out our page there, because you'll be able to see all the cards. We'll put them all up on screen. But we will read them so that, you know, if you can't do that, you can try and follow along as best you can. Hopefully you'll know some of these cards, because some of them are Commander staples.
Yeah, we'll go through, do a little discussion on all, and then we get to choose. Oh my gosh, I feel like we're limited resources here. We get to choose which one of these creatures we would take, or lands, or artifacts, or whatever, which card we would take first. So we're going to pretend like we just opened up a draft on Magic Online for the Legendary Cube. The first
and
pack.
For what it's worth, this is very much a pack you could open. Like, we kind of hit the random button a couple times found an actual booster pack.
Excellent. Ooh, that's exciting.
So this is indicative of what you could open when you do play the cube. All right, Jimmy.
Sweet. Okay, yeah. So we've already sorted them into subtypes so that we can just go through them more easily. All right, here comes the booster pack. We're starting off with creatures. The first creature in the pack is Orym, Samite Healer. I've never seen this guy before. One white, actually a she. It is a 1/3 legendary creature, human cleric, and you can tap to prevent the next 3 damage that would be dealt to target creature or player this turn.
I have played with this card. These type of cards are actually sort of freakishly good.
Yeah.
It's hard to see it on the card, but it makes combat like so complicated.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's tough to attack and block with this guy.
And someone that is playing something like Merith or something that pings, you can just really blank a lot of that stuff too.
Yeah, it's actually a very good card. I mean, it's, well, we'll go through. It's going to be hard to tell from only one card whether or not that one card is pickable or not.
Yeah, I think this is much better 1v1, however.
Yeah,
oh,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
The next one is Miri the Cursed. 2/2 black for a 3/2 vampire cat legend. Meow. Has flying, first strike, and haste. Whenever Miri the Cursed deals combat damage to a creature, put a 1/1 counter on Miri the Cursed. Remember, she does have first strike, so
yeah.
Unless she's fighting a creature with first strike, she'll get that counter before taking damage.
Yeah, she reminds me a lot of Drana, the Liberator of Malakir, mm-hmm. that yep. was in Balfour's Zendikar. But I played against this card once in a 1v1 game, and I was destroyed by it.
I mean, if it hits one time and doesn't die, you're probably in big trouble.
Yeah, and it's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
because
if you couldn't
kill
it the first time, then what's going to happen the next time?
Yeah, now notably, both of our cards so far have had 2 of the mana symbols in them, so it is a little bit of a dedication if we're going to go into these cards.
Adam, is there anything we're seeing so far from these first 2 cards that are sort of archetype specific that you know, one of the archetypes you talked about earlier?
No, one thing to notice is that if you look at the legends, not a lot of them are lower on the mana curve.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So these are actually on the low end.
Interesting.
That's a good point, because there's not a lot of 2-drop legends. There's just not very many of them. Yeah,
exactly. In fact, our booster does not have a single card that is 2 CMC or less.
Right.
Oh, so no Kid Jason, I suppose.
There's actually only a couple that are 3
There are cards in the cube.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, our booster, correct. Yeah.
Our booster, but you just don't see a really high percentage mm-hmm. of them compared to a regular main booster set draft environment.
Yeah, well, that certainly mimics Commander as well, which games always, of course, tend to go longer, and you're able to put out bigger, sweeter creatures.
If you jam your Commander deck full of 1 mana and 2 mana cards,
you're
it's not,
not
a good place to be.
No.
But
exactly.
If you do that in your modern deck, then you're doing something right.
It's great.
Yeah, right.
The next card everybody will be familiar with that plays Commander, it's Urabrask the Hidden, 3/2 red for a 4/4 legendary creature, Praetor. Creatures you control have haste, and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, now this is a proper aggro card right here, especially because it's so hard for your opponent to put real blockers down.
It's hard to come back. If you're ever behind and they play Urabrask, it's really hard to come back.
Yeah, especially if they're attacking. But,
especially if you plan on coming back by playing blockers.
Yes, yeah. It's just never going to happen, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's a very powerful card, and a 5-mana 4/4, nothing to scoff at. Now, this next guy, this guy's a beating. It's Thrun, the Last Troll. 2 green for a 4/4 legendary creature, Troll Shaman. Thrun the Last Troll can't be countered, very important, and he also cannot be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control.
So has hexproof.
Has hexproof, and for one in the green, you can regenerate him. Holy moly.
4 mana, 4/4, hexproof, can't be countered, 2 mana to regenerate.
This is like the perfect thing to strap stuff onto. Equipment, enchantment, auras.
Is there a Voltron archetype?
Not really. There are absolutely equipment.
Mm-hmm.
In here, but I wouldn't say there's an equivalent of the modern hexproof deck.
Uh-huh.
there's certainly not like a Daybreak Cornet
strategy
in here. However, this is kind of like one of the quote unquote beatdown cards.
Right.
Where your beatdown cards, you're starting higher, but you're hitting really hard. Thrun and Urabrask and Miri are all three of them are pretty good and kind of dealing lots of damage quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even if they're not starting, you know, on turn one or two or whatever.
Yeah, and do remember that in the cube you will have 20 life, not 40 life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. That's important to notice. So there are attacking strategies that are worthwhile, even if everything is more expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So our next card here is not for an attacking strategy.
I think you mentioned her earlier as one of your favorite cards.
Yep.
Yeah. It's Hannah Ship's Navigator.
Love this card.
So for 1W, it's a 1/2, not very big, but it has the ability of 1W, tap it to return an artifact or enchantment card from your graveyard to your hand. So there's a lot of really cool artifacts and enchantments that we'll get to later. And this kind of ties them together if they get destroyed or even if you sacrifice them yourself.
Yeah. There's a value engine.
Yeah, we mentioned Tezzeret as well, so there's definitely an artifact theme that you can see between those two cards.
Oh, yeah, this would go with the artifact Duretti or... Yeah, right.
Yep, absolutely. And there's stuff like Trading Post and even simple stuff like Chromatic Star.
Oh, yeah, great card.
Now, this is a dual-colored card. It's blue and white.
Yeah.
How does that fit into the cube? How... I mean, spoiler alert, we've got three... we got three dual lands or fixing lands. One's a freaking expedition, actually.
But that's the art I put in there.
There's plenty of fixing in this pack, but we don't know if that's indicative of how the entire cube is. Is there a lot of fixing?
No, there's a higher number of fixing. There's a high number of artifact mana.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of your games will start with an artifact mana.
So we shouldn't hesitate to think about taking a two-color card then at all.
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, a lot of your decks will be 3 and 4 and even 5 colors.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Josh is
5 color.
Excited.
That's what I'm talking about.
And to correspond, the reason we did this gave you a lot of opportunity to play lots of colors. There's a ton of multicolored legends.
Yeah, of course. Most of them.
A lot of the cube is multicolored.
Yeah.
More than a normal set, and it has a very multicolored feel to it.
That's so exciting, and I'm so glad that we get the fixing to be able to do it justice as well.
Oh, the fixing is really good. You can't avoid it for the whole draft and get it, but...
You're going to have to draft it at some point, guys.
Exactly, but there's plenty to go around.
Very nice. Our next legendary creature is Karavik the Merciless. And this guy's sweet. He was actually a choice at the Community Cup this year for one of the commanders you could build around. A red and a black for a 5/4 human shaman. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, Karavik the Merciless deals damage to target creature or player equal to that spell's converted mana cost. Holy moly. We were just talking about how this cube has high mana cost creatures and everything. Yeah.
Another beatdown or aggro type card.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at a certain point, your opponent might not even be able to play any spells.
Yeah. Well, also, if they just have to, like, kill spell them with something that costs a lot of mana,
they'll just take damage.
A free burn, yeah.
Yeah.
It could take out a bunch of other creatures. And, yeah, this card's quite powerful.
It does cost 7 mana, though. I would be hesitant to take a 7-drop as my pack one, pick one.
True. I mean, if it was a Eugene, would you take it?
I would definitely think about it. The next guy is slightly cheaper, 6 mana, 4 for a red and a green for, it's Rurikthar, the Unbowed. 4 red and a green for a 6/6 legendary ogre warrior, has vigilance and reach. Rurikthar attacks each turn if able, so that's okay because it has vigilance. And whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Rurikthar deals 6 damage to that player.
Oh, boy.
It's kind of like Karavik, but, well, Karavik's merciless, whereas Rurik Thar has a little bit of mercy.
Yeah, he'll let you cast creature spells. Unbowed. Yeah, he's not merciless by any means.
He's like, oh, you cast a creature, I'll show you mercy.
Right, which is funny because he's a giant ogre that looks like he just clobbles around all day.
He's got 2 heads. It's like Warcraft, not World of Warcraft, although they are in there, but you know, you remember the ogre that had 2 heads?
Yep.
We're ready, Master. I'm not ready.
Yeah, this card's also a beating.
Yeah, so this card is the bane of my existence. I like to draft a lot of the instants and sorceries stuff. So,
oh, man, the instants and sorceries deck, this just stops it dead, right? I mean,
yeah, 6 damage per spell. Holy
moly.
That's
so much.
Yeah. So this guy is, really, really good against that strategy.
Very cool. Well, I like that we're already seeing that certain decks can counter other ones in really interesting ways. And it's creature-based, too, which is really exciting.
Yeah, pretty
that's
interesting.
A lot of what we try to do is put in some strategies and then put in counters to that strategy when we could.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Another reason I love legendary creatures is because they are essentially walking enchantments in a lot of ways.
They have just 12 abilities, It's just awesome.
There is all of these cards just have... There's Isimar, but that's about it.
Rurikar has Vigilance, Reach, attacks each turn of Fable, and deals 6. Like, that's 4 things.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he does have 2 heads, so.
I'm in love with this next card.
2 for each head.
Oh, yeah. You want to read this next one?
This next one only has 1 ability, though.
But it's a good one.
Yeah, it's pretty pertinent.
All right, we have Captain Sisse, 2G dub for a 2/2 human soldier. And it's... only ability.
Only got 1.
It's okay.
Tap, search your library for a legendary card, and put it into your hand.
What is this cube called
again? Legendary card, also, which is... there may be legendary lands. There may be legendary
enchantments.
Yep, we know there's a legendary enchantment.
Spoiler alert, yeah. It's the legendary cube, guys.
It just tutors.
Yeah. So this card was a card that was... had a lot of discussion about, is this card too powerful?
Right.
It seems like it's Galena-like.
Yeah, this is the positive one. Instead of stealing all your opponent's stuff, this just goes crazy with your stuff. So
it's more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we felt it's certainly more fun. And we felt it was like, you can't really build a legendary cube without Captain Sisse. Like, that's such a letdown.
Yeah, she is the leader of the Skyship Weatherlight. I mean,
right now...
If it wasn't for her, Hannah wouldn't be here either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, we're taking Sisse, right? I mean, we haven't read the whole pack, but...
That is my top bet. I may go for, like, an Urabrask, though, because I'm kind of crazy and I love red.
You are Jimmy the Red. I think Hannah is my second pick. How about you, Adam?
I would take Captain Sisse for sure out of the cards we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't take Captain Sisse, I would probably take Karavik.
Nice. Very merciless indeed.
Yeah, Karavik's really strong in this environment.
You're not taking the bane of your existence, Rurik Thar?
No.
Well, he's not in that deck yet, so he doesn't have to hate draft.
That's true.
All right, well, we are not done with the pack, so we have...
We are only half done.
So we have 3 lands. The Expedition Stomping Ground.
Now, I just put the art in there. I don't know if the actual
card... I highly doubt the Expedition is...
Why not?
Magic
Why can't it be
here?
The Expedition art?
Go big or go home, right?
Yeah, okay, so it's Stomping Ground in the cube. It's not like... it's not like a normal pack, unfortunately, where you don't get to keep the Stomping Ground and dance around the room like a crazy person. Never done that. Stomping Ground is the shock land. It's Mountain Forest.
Yep. When there's the end of this battlefield, you can pay 2 life, and if you don't, it comes in tapped. So it gives you the option. Next up is one of the filter lands, Graven Cairns. Mm-hmm. It's the black-red Rakdos land. You can either tap it to add 1 colorless to your mana pool, or you can tap a black or a red and tap it and add black-black, black-red, or red-red to your mana pool. So any combination of the 2.
These are the lands you talked about on our last regular Command Zone episode. I'm not saying that this is any sort of indication that they'll be reprinted in the Commander 2015 product, but I hope so.
Yeah, it'd be sweet. And the next land after that is Dreadship Reef. And this is from Commander 2012, I believe. You can tap it to add 1 to your mana pool, or you can tap 1 and tap the land to put a storage counter on Dreadship Reef. And then at any point, you can tap 1 colorless mana, remove X storage counters from the land, and add X mana in any combination of blue and or black to your mana pool. So it's cool. It's a land that...
The storage land.
Yeah, storage land, but it also fixes you. And if you need to cast like a card that is three blue, you know, you're able to add enough counters on something like Dreadship Reef and get that off of there.
Yeah, how do these storage lands play in the cube, Adam?
They're really strong. A lot of times you're kind of, they help you just develop your mana, mm-hmm. which is really important. A lot of times, whoever kind of develops better off in the early game and kind of can play all of their spells in a timely fashion,
right?
It comes out ahead. So just all these mana fixing lands, all three of these are in the cube as cycles. Oh, okay. So, the rest of them. So yeah, the storage lands are really good. There's a lot of stuff where like you play 7, 8, 9, 15 mana cards.
Holy moly.
And you cast them. So there's one thing that's one mostly restriction. It's almost a hard restriction. But we didn't give you any ways to cheat creatures into play.
Right.
Oh, good. So there's
no Eurekas, no show and tells.
Yeah. Yeah, we put all the Progenitus and Emrakul and all that stuff in, but we didn't. You got to cast them.
That's awesome. So that makes the storage lands a lot better. And also, just as we mentioned before, it looks like the casting cost of your average card is going to be higher than.
Yeah.
And so a storage land is going to be better in that environment, too, it seems like.
Certainly.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, we have three more cards. This next card
was. Geez, I think it might have been your number one artifact in Commander.
It is. Speaking of fixing.
Adam, do you want to read the next one?
Yeah, it's a Chromatic Lantern. It's a 3-mana artifact from Return to Ravnica. And it taps for 1 mana of any color. So it's just a 3-mana mana rock for anything. But it also gives all your lands that ability, too. So lands you control have tap, add 1 mana of any color.
Pretty good.
So never be color screwed.
Yeah, you can play a 5-color deck with Chromatic Lantern.
So good.
I love this card. It's ramp, and it also fixes every single land you ever play for the rest of the game.
That's the thing. Yep. It itself is ramp.
Yeah.
So it also gets you ahead on mana mm-hmm. for the turn. It's I imagine it's very strong. It seems very strong.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, it's the type of card you want to get a certain amount of in every deck.
Yeah, to make it function.
Right.
Next up, we have Champion's Helm. It's our first equipment we've seen. It's a 3-drop artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+2. And as long as equipped creature is legendary, it has hexproof. So for the sake of this cube, unless you're equipping it onto tokens, essentially anytime this equips onto a creature, it gives them +2/+2 and hexproof. And the equip cost is only 1. So that seems very powerful.
Yeah, this is another card. Like, once you have a cube dedicated to legendary creatures, this space opens up, so cards like Champion's Helm. Mm-hmm. And if you want to look up, look at Gather, look at cards that reference legendary things, they're good bet that they're in here.
Yeah, and normally, you wouldn't necessarily play this in a normal Commander deck, even though you do have legendary creatures in there, because it just doesn't get as good when you don't have multiple targets to equip it to that can benefit from the hexproof.
Right, you can't start moving it around.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in this, every creature you have is going to be legendary. So
yeah, every
it's
creature
gonna give
you draft.
Them, I mean, I want to make my Captain Sisse hexproof.
That sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Are there a lot of sweepers in the cube? A lot of wrath effects?
Oh, there are some. Absolutely. So it's not like hexproof. It makes it totally untouchable.
Well, I mean, but are there a lot? Like, how good is hexproof?
Hexproof's pretty reasonable.
Don't hear that every day.
We balanced. Yeah. We balanced the cube around the creatures. So we picked the creatures first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we picked, some of the obvious stuff like the Champion's Helm that we just like, yeah, this has to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the rest of it, we kind of balanced it so that the creatures would shine. So there's some version of the cube that just had all the best removal of all time. So it had your Swords of Plowshares, your Doom Blades, and all your good, really good spot removal.
But then that, like, then it becomes about the removal, not the creatures, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, one of our first play tests was won by a 5-color deck with 2 creatures, and one of them was Progenitus. It's cast Progenitus, and all their strong cards were not creatures. So, like, whoa, this is wrong.
Right.
We gotta change it so that the creatures are awesome. And so, like, cards like Champion's Helm do that.
Right.
In a really fun way. And then we also just like, there is some spot removal, there are some sweepers, but they're like maybe not the top tier, or like they have extra bonuses. Mm-hmm. Like if the creatures are more expensive, you want the non-creatures to kind of match that.
Right.
Right. If you can just Path to Exile and they had to spend, 6 mana on their creature, Yeah, it's tough, especially if the cube doesn't actually give you any 1 and 2 mana creatures, because that makes total sense.
I don't want to play Karavik the Merciless if there's, you know, Swords to Plowshares.
Right. Because you just get blown out tempo-wise.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The next card is legendary, so Captain Sisse could find it. It is not a creature, though.
Often does.
It's Honden of Seeing Winds. It's 4 and a blue for a legendary enchantment shrine. At the beginning of your upkeep, draw a card for each shrine you control. So you're always going to draw at least one extra card, and I'm assuming because they're legendary that the shrine cycle is present?
Yes, all 5 are in.
So you have a chance to draft more shrines.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of it is just like, hey, which, you know, do you want to take one of them and kind of move in, see if you find another one?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all pretty good.
I mean, this one's fine. If you can find a window to cast this then and not die the next turn, then you're going to win. Like, yeah, drawing two cards there, one is just so tough.
Not to mention if you decide to go in on this, I guess, quote-unquote, cycle a little bit, and there's other ones that benefit what your deck's trying to do, you could be drawing up to 2 cards extra a turn. That just sounds very good.
And not only that, but this will double power your other...
The other shrine.
Other shrines, correct. Shrines care about shrines, apparently. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I like it a lot. All right, we have one more card in the pack. March of the Machines, 3 and a blue for an enchantment. Each non-creature artifact is an artifact creature with power and toughness, each equal to its converted mana cost. Interesting.
This is one of the few ways to get a non-legendary creature.
Uh-huh. So March of the Machines will turn Champion's Helm, funnily enough, into a 3-3.
Or a Chromatic Lantern.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it gives a really good payoff to having a ton of artifacts and enchantments.
Although it does turn your opponent's... It turns your opponent's artifacts into creatures also.
Correct.
Right.
So. However, if they have a lot of equipment, it turns all of those equipments nullified because equipment that is a creature can't equip to other creatures. So correct. It's not like your Champion's Helm that's a 3-3 can hop on the back of Captain Sisse.
It doesn't become like a bestow creature?
No.
Dang it.
So close.
Okay, so to recap here, Captain Sisse we like, Karavek we like, Hannah we like, Ur-Rask... are there any of the other cards, Chromatic Lantern?
I would consider Chromatic Lantern.
The Shrine, maybe?
Yeah. I would actually take Champion's Helm over the Shrine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think we can all agree that Captain Sisse is the clear pick. It's the best tutor you could ever make for in this whole cube, right? That's it.
I have real trouble even thinking of a card, period, that I would want over Captain Sisse in a legendary cube.
Yeah, Captain Sisse might be one of the best cards in the entire legendary.
Look at that. And we got to spoil it here on the show. I feel honored.
Yeah, nobody's ever heard of Captain Sisse before.
Well, you know,
and
in
we
the cube.
No,
all right. Yeah, so we're all agreed then. I think we're all taking Captain Sisse first.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it gets interesting because I'd take Hannah. Adam would take Karavek.
I would take Ur-Rask. Although Karavek definitely does have a.
Yeah, I might consider taking Chromatic Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it leaves you open.
One of the 5-color, you know, craziness decks.
Oh, I should have said that because I love 5. No, it's too late now. He took it.
Yeah, Josh, you're off brand, man. You got to figure
off brand. You stayed with yours. You're Jimmy the Red, and you said Ur-Rask.
Because I have a brand to uphold. I know what. All right. So okay, very cool though. So let's take a look at this pack sort of in a larger. Larger viewpoint. Let's see what we can visualize about the pack and what it says about the cube. So we've already mentioned a little bit of this. Obviously, fixing is a big part of the cube. Playing a lot of your cards on time and not sitting there with them wasting away in your hand is going to be very important, both for your happiness and also how well your deck does. So we can see that out of the 15 cards in this first pack, 4 of them have fixing. So I think that's important to note that you're not going to probably take it first or second pick, but it's something that you could consider taking third, fourth from that point on.
There is only one ramp card, which is Chromatic Lantern. And again, we've only seen one pack. Adam, is there a lot of ramp in the cube, too? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is there the Kodama's Reach type stuff?
Yep. Okay. The Signets and Talismans and, you know, just a bunch of other, you know, one-ofs, like Kodama's Reach.
Yeah, very very good card, obviously.
So you cannot cheat out creatures, but there are ways to accelerate your mana so that you get the creatures early.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. We don't see any 3-color cards present, although I'm assuming that the 3-color...
They're there. there are lots of 3-color cards. I believe there are 30.
Yeah, it would be very hard to bake a legendary cube without three color cards.
Yeah.
We just, for some reason, got all allied pairs, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. Are there any of the three color like commanders that reference like the command zone or anything like that? Like,
no. So,
I'm assuming we'd have to stay away from like Aloro and Derevi and those types.
Yeah, something like Aloro just doesn't really do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
In an environment like this. So a lot of what makes Aloro cool and powerful is that it kind of just hangs out in your command zone.
Right.
Well, in this, it's not going to hang out in your command zone. It's only going to do its thing when you cast it. So right. It's just like not the same card. It's kind of a watered down version if we were to include a card like Aloro. So we decided not to use any of the like command zone related cards.
Yeah, that makes sense because none of the cards are going to go to the command zone.
It doesn't really exist in the 1v1.
What about something like Prosh, which is sort of related to the command zone, but it would still do something even if it wasn't. I'm just out of curiosity.
I think Prosh was in and out. Uh-huh. I believe it's not in the final cube. Just like we wanted to kind of, we talked about it. That's the type of stuff we do on a, you know, every meeting. We uh-huh. talk about design decisions or development decisions. It's like, hey, do we want to encourage this, you know, these types of cards where, okay, they're not their full power. They're not
right.
They're not played as intended, but they still have an effect.
Uh-huh.
And so I believe we decided to not include any of them. I know,
sort of keep it clean. Yeah, I understand.
Right.
That.
And use cards where you got to use the full effect.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah, you want to feel legendary when you're casting these things, obviously.
Exactly.
Now, the power level is super high. How important is removal going to be in this set? Now, we didn't see any in our booster pack, so we have no idea how much of it there is.
Oh, yeah, like I said earlier, there's not a lot of the like top tier
Swords of Plowshares,
type stuff.
Like what type of removal are we looking at when you say that? Are we looking at I don't know, Utter End type stuff, or is it like
Utter End is a good example.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of stuff that is more expensive and kind of gives you bonuses doing stuff, either with, like, an extra mode or extra, you know, kicker type bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, are things like the charms?
Those are all considered.
Uh-huh.
Some are in and some are not.
Oh, so it's not, like, full cycles of charms necessarily?
Correct.
Yeah, cool. It'd be tough to fit all of them in, I'd also assume. And then I guess some of them don't have full support in an archetype or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and some of them just don't have a lot of great use.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the efficient removal only kills small stuff. That was one thing we tried to do where you can't use your 2-mana card to kill a 7-mana card very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use your... I mean, removal is important because these cards are really, really powerful.
Right, mm-hmm. But you wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a tempo blowout anytime someone used a cheap removal spell against a very powerful creature.
If you talk about a normal cube, a lot of these cards don't make the cut in when you just put the power to the max.
Right, right.
Instead, we decided to go for it because the legendary theme kind of is like, hey, let's do a little low power where you have time to assemble your cool combinations.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this sounds like? It sounds like Rise of the Eldrazi, which is like my favorite draft format ever.
Oh,
well,
yeah, definitely.
That being said, Rise of the Eldrazi had a lot of power
right.
yeah.
in it as well.
But it was also purposely sort of slowed down. Like they were worried about the same thing, right? Which was like, we don't want it to be like you finally cast your 8-mana spell and there's just a million ways to deal with it for 2 mana.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing. Is like, so Rise of the Eldrazi draft did have, like, yeah, we do want to slow down the game. We do want the big stuff to matter.
Yeah. I mean, the cheapest black removal spell punished you for getting rid of something big because you lost a lot of life if you did it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so, yeah, Vendetta is a really good example of the type of card we were looking for. I'm not sure if we included actual Vendetta.
Right, right. But like, yeah, you want to find that balance so that removal just doesn't feel overpowered.
Right.
I like that. I tend to like, you know, and the sort of newer formats, Battle for Zendikar is like mm-hmm. that, where it's a little bit slowed down and you have time to do stuff and do cool stuff. Of
yeah,
course,
you
I
get,
like that.
You get
I'm a commander player.
Yeah, exactly. You feel like you get to play with your cards more. Very exciting.
And on the flip side of that, you don't want to feel helpless mm-hmm. when your opponent casts something really powerful. It's like, oh, wow, I just didn't see any way to kill that in my whole draft.
Right.
What am I, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to interact with that one?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because as you saw in our booster, there's a lot of really powerful stuff. Like, if your opponent caps a Captain Sisse, you're not just dead on the spot.
Right, right.
Yeah, you need some way to be able to be like, okay, kill Captain Sisse. And by the way, if anybody casts Captain Sisse against you, kill it immediately.
Yeah, it seems like a high priority target there.
One activation is maybe enough.
Yeah.
Unless you want to see every good, powerful legend in their deck.
Yeah, come out over the course of the game. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know how in a lot of games people are like, I just need to draw this one card. Well, if you have Captain Sisse, you get to draw that card every turn.
Yeah, you get to choose that. You're like, what do I want this time?
Plus my draw step. I still get it.
Exactly. All right, so let's pretend that the cube draft is over, and when that happens, you might win a prize pack. Oh,
yeah, so the prize packs are interesting. Again, this comes out of a lot of the good work done by digital R&D, where we kind of think of trying to come up with new ways to bring, like, the content. We have awesome content in the Magic the Gathering, and we try and bring it to online in the best way possible. And what we wanted to do with this cube is give you something that didn't just feed into itself, kind of like built your collection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it makes total sense, too, because if this is opening up to a different market than Cube normally is, and also a different market than maybe even Magic Online normally is, then the best way to get somebody who's tried something out to keep doing it is not necessarily give them player points, you know, to let them sort of, it's almost like experience points or something in a role-playing game where it's like, yeah, you get some cards, you add it to your collection, you can start, you know, branching out into playing Commander like Jimmy's going to do online.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you draft Battle for Zendikar online, you'll get some cards just by, you know, you get the cards that you open and then you'll get booster packs if you win from Battle for Zendikar. So
right.
Drafting kind of helps build your collection over time. That's how I would build my collection. I draft a ton.
Yeah, same here.
I just trade them all in, but...
And with cubes, you can't actually do that. You can't actually give you the cards. Otherwise, you know, all sorts of things go wrong.
Yeah, so it would cause massive unbalance in the world.
Exactly. So what we decided to do was give you a subset of... Not a subset of the cube, but a set of cards.
Yeah, 149 total.
Yeah, there are 149 of them. They come across all the Commander products. So the sets that we drew these 149 cards from were all the Commander products. So either original Commander, Commander 13, 14, now 15.
Mm-hmm.
The Commander's Arsenal. So all those cards are in here with the Commander's Arsenal art.
Oh, what? My goodness. Sylvan Library, yeah. Everybody.
So, and then...
Jimmy's eyes just lit up like a Christmas tree.
The Conspiracy and one more. Plane Chase 2.
Very cool, yeah.
A couple cards.
So this is prize packs for Commander, basically.
Yes. Yeah. So this card was basically to help boost Commander online.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a lot of cards that... We picked cards that are heavily played in Commander whenever possible.
And we should say that the prize packs are 6 cards total.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it was really interesting looking at these. So we're just like, okay, so we'll have we looked at like, oh, let's just do a normal booster. It'll have 15 cards and you'll have a whole bunch of commons. And then we looked at it and just like, there are no commons in Commander products.
Right. And, yeah. And Commander players don't play a lot of commons.
There are very few that we use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we have access to like basically the same card pool that Vintage does almost. And there's no reason to use a lot of the commons. I mean, there's a few.
Yeah.
There are some, but there aren't enough of them to fill a whole booster. So we decided, okay, let's get rid of common rarity. Now we'll just have uncommon, rare, mythic. And then once we added, we kind of put commons and uncommons together. So you should see some commons that are rarity shifted up to uncommon.
Gotcha.
So there's going to be one rare and then 5 uncommons, and some of those might be commons once in a while.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They'll all be of the same rarity, but some of them might have originally been commons.
Gotcha.
Excellent. Well, let's crack open our real...
Okay, well, let me ask one more question really quick, Adam, because I'm not sure if it's... Oh, you're cracking already.
Cracked.
So if I understand you right, not necessarily all the cards in the prize packs will be in the cube.
Yes, it's a different selection. Yeah.
It's a different selection. One thing to really notice that all of the cards in Commander 15 That's how you get them. You get them. They're all in these prize packs.
Right. Okay. So all 55 of the new cards are available in the prize pack?
Yeah.
Because you're going to need to get them somehow when you build your commander deck, Jimmy.
Hey, you know, if you're getting five uncommons per pack, you're probably going to collect these pretty fast because there's only 150 cards in the set that you can win here. So that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right. So let's crack it open. We've got five uncommons. We'll read those first, and then we'll go on to our rare. Our first uncommon is Vow of Duty. It's a 2 and white for an enchantment aura. You enchant a creature, and it gets +2/+2, has vigilance, and can't attack you or a planeswalker you control. So this is what I like to call the anti-Voltron card. You stick it on someone else's commander, and they can no longer swing at you with it. But it becomes huge and has vigilance and will end the game more quickly for everyone else while you kind of can find your answer to that card when it comes time.
Or just ignore it forever because it can never attack you.
Correct.
Yeah, it's one of those cards that kind of make... In Commander, you stick it on somebody else's guy, and that card will even be stronger, but it'll have to go get somebody else. It can't kill you.
Yeah, this was from Conspiracy, so we've seen a little bit there. Oh, the next card is Deceiver Exarch.
Yeah, this is Modern playable.
It's a 2 and a blue for a 1/4 cleric with flash. When Deceiver Exarch enters the battlefield, you can choose one untap target permanent you control. Or tap target permanent in opponent controls, you almost always untap your creature that either has Splinter Twin on it or is Kiki Jiki.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't have that value, because it's targeted permanent and not a non-land permanent, you can do lands, which is actually really helpful.
Yeah, or Gilded Lotus or something cool like that.
Oh, yeah, seriously. So that's a very good card.
So another thing we did through the prize packs is we put a decent amount of cards that if you're interested in the... competitive formats on Magic Online, Modern, Legacy, and Vintage, there are cards for you. So if you're not a Commander player, there are cards in these prize packs that you will want to own.
Yeah, this is a good crossover card that's useful in many formats. So,
Which is very powerful.
Yeah, particularly Modern. But it's definitely use in Modern is a big reason why we put Deceiver Exarch in the prize packs.
Sweet.
You want to read the next one, Adam?
Yeah, so then we have, let's say, we have Harmonize, just a simple time-shifted concentrate. It's 2GG sorcery, draw 3 cards.
Hey, it's Green's Ancestral Recall.
It's very good.
Yeah, it's great.
Because it's just not an effect Green really can replicate that easily. And so, especially Mono Green almost always wants a card like this.
Yeah, I would definitely play this in most of my Mono Green decks. I know a lot of people that play in decks that are like... that don't have that much card draw otherwise, like green, white, you know?
Yep.
It's a great way to sort of get just a little extra value in there for a card. It's a 3-for-1.
The next card is a land. It's Crumbling Necropolis. It's one of the tri-lands. It taps for Grixis, and it comes into play tapped. So that's blue, black, and red.
Yeah, that's my land right there. Those are Marchesa colors. My favorite.
Nice.
I love tri-lands.
Yeah,
I love all lands.
Yeah, how can you not? They make the game possible.
Well, in a 5-color deck, you can play all 10 tri-lands.
Yeah. Very true. And our final uncommon, you guys will know this one, Swiftfoot Boots, 2-drop artifact equipment. Equipped creature has hexproof and haste, and it equips for 1. So cheap.
Any Voltron deck needs that card.
Yeah, totally. All right, we got to our rare in the pack, and we were talking about Plane Chase earlier, and our card, I believe, comes from it. Shardless Agent.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, this card has also just hasn't been reprinted that often. I don't think ever, maybe.
Since Plane Chase 2.
Yeah. It's a great card, though. It's 1 green blue for a 2/2 with Cascade. And it's also an artifact creature, so that doesn't matter for some decks. Cascading is just, what a crazy mechanic. If you guys have Maelstrom Wanderer decks, you know what Cascade is. It's when you cast the spell, you exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card that costs less. So in this case, 2 CMC or below. And then you can play it without paying its mana cost.
Yeah, this is a card, again, I was talking about cards that would support the competitive formats on Magic Online. So this is a prominent legacy card.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And it's very good in Commander because you can actually build your Commander deck so this hits like a single specific card.
Yeah.
Because Commander decks you can build with only 1 2-drop in the whole deck.
Right.
And so you can just make sure that every time you play Shardless Agent, you get that 2-drop.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet, by the way. It's like, hey, I have to have Swiftfoot Boots in this deck. And it's like, guess what? Mm-hmm. You're not running, and you're running some 1-drop artifacts like Sol Ring, but it's like, great, well, if this finds a Sol Ring, then this would be a sweet card.
Or if there's just a card that happens to combo really well with your general, let's say, so you know you're always going to want it, you can really do interesting things with Cascade in general, but especially Shardless Agent because it sits at that specific point on the mana curve.
Yeah, I would just put this in a commander deck and only put Sol Ring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right? And there you go. Boom.
And you got two Sol Rings.
Yeah, three mana Sol Ring. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take it.
And a 2/2 while you're at it, you know. All right, well, let's do a quick wrap-up. The Legendary Cube, we'll give all the information at the end of the show as well, but it's going to be running from November 18th to December 9th. There's going to be an article with all the details on the Cube. It was released on November 2nd, so we're going to give you guys all the links for that so you can check it out. You know, I was intimidated by Magic Online for a while because I was like, I'm not going to play Commander on it. I'm afraid of misclicking and stuff, and it honestly just took me something like this, a cool format to draft to get me into it for Magic Online. Those cons of Tarkir for me last year, so I'm really excited. I think this is a great chance for a lot of people to get introduced to Magic Online and hopefully also Commander on Magic Online, because we get asked about that all the time on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think Commander players will have, you know, they'll have a leg up on some people that maybe play like the spikier, more competitive formats, because like Adam was saying, we know a lot of these cards already. Yeah. Like Ur-Rask or something is not a card that sees competitive play, but we know that card because you see it all the time in Commander. So you know what other cards might work well with it, and there's a good chance a lot of those are in the cube. So it's a good time to jump in if you've never tried Magic Online, because it's going to be more familiar. I think
we'll have a leg up too, for sure. Yeah, we definitely have a little bit of an edge there.
I think there's a lot to be had. Like, if you come from either a Commander background or cube background, I think you'll have skills that really translate.
Yeah, totally.
Into this thing. I used Robert Schuster as my commander muse, so to speak.
Was he dressed as a pirate the whole time? Say yes.
He was not.
So close.
It just spoiled for you. But I think we got to a point where, you know, both of us were like, yes, I get this cube. I know what's, you know, I know what's going on. I can use my skills that I, you know, learned in a previous Magic experience to translate over into this. And it's something different. It's like, there's so many cards in the Legendary Cube that I've never cast before.
Ooh.
Like, right, because you don't play a ton of Commander.
If I don't play a ton of Commander, and a lot of these cards kind of fit into the, you know, before working on this thing, I had never cast a Captain Sisse.
Well, welcome to a new world of a ton of fun.
Right? A whole new world.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I probably got the top end of Captain Sisse's power level.
Oh, nice, Captain most Sisse's certainly. So good. Especially because you can play 5-color Captain Sisse easily.
Yep.
Very, very cool.
Well, I am super excited to try it out.
Me too.
But in the meantime, I'm more excited for what's about to happen.
That's right. We're wrapping up our Legendary Cube Talk, because it's time.
It's time
to talk about our Commander 2015 spoiler. Woohoo!
What?
Very exciting. All right. But before we get to our spoiler, we have a sponsor for today's show, and that is Loot Crate. We've talked about these guys before. We're friends with the creators of the company. They helped out with Video Game High School in the past, as well as my own personal fundraiser for Band-Aid last year. These guys are great. It's less than $20 a month for a subscription box service. You get $40 plus worth of geek, gamer, pop culture gear, collectible stuff, apparel, comics, etc., and it's delivered straight to your mailbox every single month. And of course, every single month, the Loot Crate is themed, and this month, the theme is combat. So you've got some cool stuff from Blizzard, Fallout 4, Capcom, The Hunger Games, etc. Really, just talking about Loot Crate doesn't do it justice. You guys have to go to lootcrate.com/command, and you can actually see really great pictures of what's inside a typical box. And really, if you just look at it for half a second, you'll realize that there is a lot of value in here. It's really great if you're into collecting this kind of stuff, or if you want to re-gift the items to your friends because you know they'll like it. So if you guys go to lootcrate.com/command, you can sign up through the command zone, and you have until 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on November 19th to sign up through us, and you can save $3 on your new subscription today. All right, let's get back to the spoiler. Our Commander 2015 spoiler, courtesy of the mothership.
I see you going to do the drum roll and then stopping yourself. Is it because it'll make the... No, I'm still doing it.
That's a mouth roll.
Man, we need real drums or something. That just sounds bad. Hey, Terry, can you put in a drum roll?
Yeah. And the commander is... not the commander.
You turned into a game show host.
I know. And here
Come
we
on
go.
Down four.
I know. Okay, sorry, everybody. We're going to read it. Go ahead.
Okay. The card is called Rite of the Raging Storm, and it's red, so I'm very happy.
What's to the left of the Raging Storm?
Need more storm.
I guess it's R-I-T-E of the Raging
it's
Storm.
It's the player to the left of right of the Raging Storm.
It is not the left of the Raging Storm.
It's 3 red for an enchantment. Creatures named Lightning Rager can't attack you or planeswalkers you control. So we actually saw this in Vow of Duty has a very similar effect.
There are no cards named Lightning Rager, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. However,
but there will be.
Yeah. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player puts a 5/1 red elemental creature token named Lightning Rager onto the battlefield.
Uh-huh.
It has trample, haste, and at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice this creature.
So everybody gets like basically a ball lightning every turn?
Yeah, that just flies at someone's
face. But it can't attack you.
Or planeswalkers you control.
So they have to attack each other with them.
Yes.
This seems...
Right, again, this is like the souped up version of the vow that we had in our prize booster.
Yeah, yeah. Giving everyone this little Lightning Rager guy that's going, ah, I gotta swing. Well, he doesn't have to swing, but he really, really wants to. And he's not going to go after his maker.
They should have made it so he has to swing to his right. Because it's the right of the Raging Storm.
Yeah, unless that...
I don't think we have that language.
Yeah, I think that's an unset lingo we got going there.
This card's really interesting. And when you start thinking about it more, there's ways to take advantage of a lot of the stuff that it's doing, right? So it's making a creature for everybody, including yourself, every turn that they have to sacrifice. It doesn't actually say exile it at the end of turn.
Yeah, a lot of these effects usually say exile the creature at the end of your turn. It's really interesting because, you know, my brain immediately jumped to the worst case scenario, which is like, well, everyone's going to get these 5/1s, and then they're all going to look at each other and being like, well, I don't want to swing at you because you're scary, so I'm just going to hold them back.
Right.
In which case, it's like, oh, this card isn't as good as I thought. However, there are some really interesting cards that interact well with this. The first is a commander called card, a card called Assault Suit.
Oh, yeah.
This is an equipment that the text says, equipped creature gets +2/+2, has haste, can't attack you or a planeswalker you can control, and can't be sacrificed.
So you put it on yours, and then now everybody's going to have two of these every turn, and they have to attack, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Assault Suit says, the other part of it is, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, you may have gain control of equipped creature until end of turn. And if you do, untap it. So you can essentially pass around a unsacrificable 5/1 with Assault Suit, which is interesting because
it'll actually be a 7/3.
Yeah, right. It's even bigger.
So you can pass these around the table and they can't just get you. And more importantly, they just can't be sacrificed.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
That's the real key.
Yeah, I like this card, Assault Suit, a lot because it kind of motions toward a deck that I don't think a lot of people play, but I think is really effective, which is let them fight it out kind of thing, or like have the incidental damage of other things take people down.
It's like the instigator deck, right? It's like you make them fight each other while you sort of step aside. Zergo plays this card a lot.
Yeah.
It's a common card in the Zergo decks. This enchantment is red, so it could go into a Zergo deck that already has Assault Suit. So it could be a good inclusion there.
Certainly. See, this card makes me think of Dictate of the Twin Gods, Furnace of Wrath, Gisela, all these cards that basically say, like, these 5/1s, they're doing 10 damage instead of 5 now, and they have Trample and Haste. I think Trample is the most important part of these Lightning Ragers because they could just run into a bigger creature like a 6/6, and they're just like, whatever. But the fact that they can trample over makes it a lot harder. Especially if you're out there to instigate war on the world and make everything do double the damage, then giving everyone a 10/1 on a stick is really powerful.
Every turn? Yeah, seems pretty good.
Yeah,
this plays up into kind of, historically, red is easily the worst color in Commander.
Yes.
It doesn't really have an identity. So a lot of what we're trying to do is make red cards that, like, feel red, but also work in a multiplayer thing. So, like, what this card does is it kind of just makes stuff happen.
Yeah, I like that. It gets the party going.
Exactly. So, you know, red is often, you know, hey, let's get this game over with. Like, I'm going to throw a bunch of my burn spells at your face.
Right.
You better kill me before I, you know. Red is not for self-preservation.
Right. Red doesn't think that far ahead.
Which is really bad in a multiplayer game where the name of the game is often self-preservation.
Yeah, right. Lasting through to the end of the game sort of stuff.
Yeah, so this card kind of helps other players kill each other.
Yeah, and I like that a lot because I think it is something that playgroups do sort of shy away from, which is like, you know, I just kind of want to sit back and I don't want other people to hurt me, so I'm not going to upset them. And it kind of ends up in long, grindy games. And I love cards like this because it really does force people's hands. And it also is a really interesting political thing because, you know, even though your opponent's the one getting the creature, it's not like you don't have any input on where that creature is going to swing when the person goes to combat with it. You know, you can really sort of push people's agendas left and right a little bit if you're playing the table correctly, which is great.
I think, you know, to your point that you talked about earlier, which was the fear is that nothing's forcing them to attack with it. So players could just get the 5-1 and then just
refuse
to attack. So I might combine this with red does have a lot of effects that just cause creatures to have to attack every turn.
The diplomats.
Yeah, exactly. Goblin diplomats are one of them. There's a lot of effects in red that do that. And that might be a good way to sort of cause them to have to use them. And the great thing about a card like this is, like, let's say Jimmy plays it. And then on my turn, I get a 5-1. And then there's two other players I can attack. And if I'm forced to attack one of them, it's not like that player goes, oh, I forgive you, dude. He says, no, why didn't you attack the other guy?
Yeah.
You had a choice between the two of us. You chose to attack me. Now he's mad at him. And it just did exactly what Jimmy wanted it to, which it made me and that other guy fight, even though it should be like, hey, but Jimmy made me do that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because I did have a choice between the two other players. Then one of them can get legitimately mad that I attacked them.
It shifts the burden of blame completely on the person that has to swing it, which is great.
Yeah,
because when it comes around to your turn, you can be like, I'm not swinging with it.
I won't use the Goblin Diplomats on myself.
Yeah. I also love cards because, again, you're sacrificing it at the end of turn, so it does die. Blood Artist, I think, is a really good card if you're playing that kind of deck. Again, sort of like the Purphoros Blood Artist.
Blood Artist is great because it's damage to everybody. Every round of the table.
Every round of the table. Life. Yeah, which is really interesting because, you know, Blood Artist is just good by itself. But now that you know that for certain cards are going to be dying and you're sort of building decks to take advantage of this, I think you're in a really good position.
Oh, man. Death Reap Ritual.
Yeah, Death Reap Ritual. Morbid triggers, right? So anytime a creature, if it died this turn, you may draw a card. Or that's what Death Reap Ritual says. That's insane, right? Four cards off of this.
Yeah, at the beginning of each end step, if a creature died this turn, you may draw a card. So you can't draw more than one, but this means you'll draw one every single turn because every single turn their Lightning Rager will die, yep. And then it'll go to Jimmy's turn and his will die, and then every turn I'm drawing a card. That's awesome.
Yep, which is really exciting. I got defeated by this guy hardcore last night when we were playing Commander. Kresh the Blood Braided.
Was it Craig?
Yeah, it was Craig.
He has a good Kresh deck.
Whenever another creature dies, you may put X +1/+1 counters on Kresh, where X is that creature's power. So one rotation of the table. It's 20. Boom.
Kresh will get real large.
Yeah, he's jacked enough as it is. He's just going to get even buffer.
Yeah,
last night,
good.
Actually, I should mention it. Craig was playing against an Omnath deck, Locust of Rage.
Mm-hmm.
And
new Omnath.
Yeah, had a bunch of 5/5s out. And then Craig played Archfiend of Depravity and made everyone sacrifice down to 2 every turn. And, you know, the Omnath deck
and
was
Kresh
still...
was out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Kresh became like a 66-60. It was something absurd.
Yeah.
And then he had an artifact that gave it Flying Trample Haste. So it was game over for everyone.
Seems good.
Real good.
Seems pretty good.
Yeah, I think one of the cards that... The first card I thought of when I saw this card was Greater Good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because then you can just sack it and draw cards.
Yep.
Yeah. Greater Good is a green enchantment where you sacrifice a creature and draw cards equal to its power and then discard 3 cards. Is that right?
Yep. So you draw 5 and discard 3 on
that
your
seems
card.
Pretty great.
Yeah, it seems really great.
Of course, the nightmare scenario is if somebody else gets out like Dictate of Erebos or Grave Pact.
But
if you have either one of those, then
yeah,
it's
you
great.
Yeah, you could have those yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. My final card that I think is the one that people will hate me the most for is Burning Sands. Whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from play, that creature's controller sacrifices a land.
Oh, wow.
But it'll hurt you, too.
I mean, so what?
You just want to watch the world burn,
yeah,
Jimmy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, look, if you have other things that are giving people creatures or forcing things to die, I mean, you're obviously building a deck around this so that you may suffer some of the results of the harm of Burning Sands, but really, you're trying to inflict pain on other people.
You see what I'm dealing with here, Adam? You see what I'm dealing with?
If you wanted nobody to play with you ever again, you can just play Armageddon.
But Burning Sands, it takes steps. It takes effort, you know?
It's got more style points.
Yeah. It'll force the Rune player to blink at his Lightning Ranger instead of it dying or whatever.
All right, so we can't go through every card that would interact in an interesting way with Left of the Raging Storm, but we would like to hear from everybody out there. If you want to tweet at us, email us, is there another way to get a hold of us? Comment on the YouTube page or the Rocket Jump page
about
what cool combination synergies interesting interactions you see with this card, we would love to hear about it.
Yeah, and we'll retweet them, we'll post them around, and we'll have a discussion.
And we'll put them into our decks, yeah, too.
Yeah. I'll give you guys a starting point. We did not talk entirely about cards that care about creatures specifically being sacrificed, and there's a couple of cards out there, new and old, that are really good.
Oh, the new Smothering Abomination I see you've got written down there. That seems pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that's a hint. That's one of them. All right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, super spoiler alert, right?
Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me.
And we're really excited to play your legendary cube.
Yeah, every single detail that you guys need to know or link to find out more about the cube, how to get involved, and how to play it is going to be in the show notes or the more info box below our YouTube video. As a reminder, it runs from November 18th to December 9th. You may see me or Josh on there. My account. Yeah, and Adam. My account name is Jimmy_CMDZ.
Mine is Josh_CMDZ.
And mine is Watsy_AdamP.
Ooh, how fancy. You get Watsy.
If I am in a game and I'm like, I see Adam's handle, I'm going to be shaking in my boots. This is the guy that designed the... Oh, man. Yeah. I would be like...
You'd
I'll
be shaking
nervous.
In your Swiftfoot boots.
Yeah, I'll be trying to do something totally off the wall and ridiculous that may or may not work.
Right, yeah. How many times have you drafted it in any iteration, I guess, of the current cube?
We probably did about... You know, 6 or 7 playtests that I took part in.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't recognize.
It's changed a lot since
then. It's changed so much from the first iteration. The first iteration is a total guess.
Very cool.
Have I mentioned that your job is really cool?
You have. And okay. I agree.
Very nice.
A lot of time, one really interesting thing about my job is that I still love playing Magic once the sets are released.
Yeah,
because in my job, cards change so often that I barely recognize. You know, I've played the set that is released so little, because if we're happy with everything in the set, we're just done.
Right, right.
Our job's done, so we keep working and iterating on things, and so that I still play FNMs whenever I can. I still love playing Standard. I log into Magic Online on the regular and play all the stuff that I worked on, and it's still a new experience for me.
It is really cool to talk to WotC employees, and they'll tell you stories about, well, this card used to be this, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting to see. And a lot of times you're like, it used to what? That's insanity. And they're like, yeah, we know. That's why it's not doing that anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
There's all sorts of stuff like that. You know, could tell you about Empress Galena, just like, oh, that was
Yeah.
So if you do see Adam across from you on an MTGO, make sure to ask him for a cool story.
Yeah. Requisite have to give you one.
I'll be happy to share one.
So the full cube list is going to be available on the 9th, which should be 4 days from the release of this podcast. Adam, you're also writing an article about the design. I'm looking forward to reading that.
It'll be up on the 9th, and it'll just go about all the trials and tribulations that went into making the legendary cube.
Very cool. Also, you're going to be interviewed by Megan and Maria for Magic the Amateuring. They are friends of the podcast. And we'll be sure to link that episode if it's out by the time.
Magic the Amateuring.
It is out.
Excellent.
It is out in the future, but which will be for the past when you're listening to this. It's complicated. Don't worry about it. All right. Now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. We gave you only ill warning about this, Adam, but do you have something cool?
I've been in the Seattle area for just over 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And last weekend was the first time I went to Pike Place Market.
Ah, very nice.
Did you catch a fish?
No, we just hung out like in the farmer's market area. We didn't actually go fishing or anything like that. But there's just like a whole bunch of cool stuff in downtown Seattle. And it was a lot of fun, and I want to go downtown more often.
Yeah.
Usually I haven't gone to downtown Seattle very often because the traffic is just horrible.
Right.
But I took the light rail for the first time, and it was very clean and very easy. Me and my girlfriend and her daughter had a total blast, and
Pike
it was
Place.
Really fun.
Pike Place is great.
I don't know if you know, but Jimmy's from Seattle.
Yeah, and it was one of those things, though, because I'd never gone to the Space Needle. I'd never gone to EMP, you know.
Really?
Well, I mean, like, we went at once to
Jimi Hendrix Museum down there?
Well, yeah, the Experience Music Project, please.
Sorry.
It's a project, not a museum.
It's a museum, everybody.
But like Pike Place was just one of those places that didn't make it to, because you grow up in this city, you know, you hear about it all the time, you see it every time they have a Seahawks game, you see them throwing the fish in at Pike Place, you know.
Yeah.
So, and when I finally did go there, there's all these, it was amazing, it was so much fun. There's all these cool little people that they sell like little stands, like their crafts and whatever else, like they bottle honey or whatever, you know. It's just like a lot of really cool artisan stuff you can
get. I bought
there.
The bottled honey there before. It's actually very good. I grew up in Portland, which is very close. The very first Starbucks is right across the street from Pike's Place.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
If you're ever in Seattle, it's sort of a must-go-to area.
It's pretty cool.
In the area, there's also this, like, there's this wall. It's a gum wall.
Oh, the gum wall, the gum wall.
It's totally, it's so gross.
It's totally gross, but you always have to
you
take
have
pictures.
To go.
Yeah, did you put gum on the gum wall?
Yeah, of course.
God. Ugh.
You have to do it with like a straw or something so you don't actually have to touch it.
I always think about those Japanese game shows where they like launch off a thing and try to stick themselves to a wall. I just imagine the gum wall being at the end of that.
Is that like those dreams where you're like on the edge of a cliff and you just have this weird desire to jump?
Yeah, it's the gum wall. You just want
to do this weird desire to like smash your face into it.
Oh, God.
Well,
no,
when you're there, you want to touch it.
You want to. It's so colorful.
It's like the three-year-old in you comes out. But
yes. You'll just contract every single communicable disease known to man.
Yeah,
absolutely,
precisely.
Do not touch the gum wall. I wanted to give a quick shout out to friend of the show Jack Landis, who I saw on Twitter made top eight at game day last weekend. Jack is, I believe, Jack's 9.
Yeah, he's a young one.
Yeah, he might be 9 or 10 now.
He's better than Magic than I am, most assuredly.
Do you know what he played?
He played a teamer list.
Ooh, oh, team nice. Ramp?
Yeah, I don't know the exact list. I know his dad played the Aristocrats deck, Eric did, and got knocked out, but Jack was in top eight.
Hey, man, big Nux. It's all about big Nux.
True story. When I worked on cons development, it was the first set I worked on at Wizards.
Oh, cool.
And when we were done playtesting our FFL, our future league standard, we thought Teemer was one of the best clans.
Because Big Nux was that good.
Yeah, we just thought, you know, between Savage Knuckleblade and Teemer Charm, and just all the really, like, all the ferocious cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Crater's Claws was one of our, you know, standout cards.
This sounds like the deck I ran at GPLA.
Yeah, man. And I was so surprised when it's probably the worst clan in terms of tournament success.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, standard. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure, because Abzan, Jeskai, Sultai all had...
And even Mardu. Day.
And even Mardu had some top eight success.
Well, Jeskai's now essentially Mardu, Jeskai. Yeah. They've combined the two, which is great.
But I would not have guessed that Teemer was one of the weaker clans.
Well, excitedly, there's a lot of red-green ramp Eldrazi decks sort of on the horizon now. People are starting to figure out.
I don't know if Teemer is one of the weaker clans. Ask Jack Landis. He doesn't think so.
Yeah. But our good friend Gabe or SG Doc has a Teemer ramp list that seems really powerful too. So
yeah,
I'm a big fan of Teemer. Those are that or Grixis are my spirit colors. So I'm all in.
Nice.
Spirit Colors. Speaking of that, our sister podcast is Masters of Modern. You can check them out on rocketjump.com right next to us on the podcast tab, rocketjump.com/the MMcast. You can follow them on Twitter @the MMcast.
Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that he does for the YouTube version of the show. You can find that at youtube.com/the Command Zone podcast, and you can find Jeffrey at livingcardsmtg on Twitter.
And Adam, where can we find you on the Twitters?
My Twitter name is very boring. It's @Adam _ Prosak.
Prosak. Not boring at all. S-A-K. S-A-K.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh
key is not a letter.
No. Josh
I'm
is Josh Lee
Kwai. Kwai.
Yeah, Josh Lee Kwai. I am just J.F. Wong. So I guess we all have quote-unquote boring usernames. But you know what? They're memorable.
All right, Adam. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, guys. We will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.